Hi, I'm Sherry Malkolik.
Hi, Sherry.
And my sobriety date is March 14th of 2001. I have a sponsor. She's here. She's going to keep me honest. And my home group is the Midtown Group, which now resides in Bethesda, Maryland. And I'm grateful to be here. And thank you to Sam for asking me. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have to remember that because some days it's it can feel more like I have to, but in reality, I get to. And so, you know, like was just read, I'm here to tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'm going to try to slow myself down. I tend to talk really fast. Speaking is not my favorite thing, so I get a little nervous, and then I speed it up to get it over with. And so we're going to try to keep it to 55 minutes. And, you know, for me, I grew up right outside of Baltimore, Maryland, in a great upbringing, you know what I mean, great family. I grew up in a home that my dad and his friend built, you know what I mean, and with, you know, my dad, my mom, I have a little sister. Nothing on the outside was wrong, you know what I mean, everything was good. I was involved in every activity you could ever possibly imagine. My mom signed me up for everything. I mean, I was in a drama learning center. I was on a jump rope team. I did ballet, tap, and jazz. I played the violin, the French horn, the oboe, the flute. I was on a soccer team. I played lacrosse. I played field hockey. I was a Girl Scout. I mean, I did a semester as a baton twirler. You know what I mean? Like, if there was, like, a camp for it or an after-school activity for it, I was signed up, you know? And so there was not... But I always felt this kind of disconnect, and I didn't have that word then. I just I had a tough time making friends. You know, I was awkward and uncomfortable from my earliest recollection with my peers. You know, I never felt like I fit in. You know, I was in all these activities, and my mom had me, you know, IQ tested and all that. I tested very high. I was in all these GT classes and all this stuff. So I already felt, you know, a little different in that respect, that I just socially was... you know, very awkward, you know, and that doesn't make me alcoholic, but it certainly, you know, set the stage for me. And, you know, I started drinking really getting into my drinking, like on a, you know, even remotely regular basis around the time I was 14. And, you know, outside what my life looked like is, you know, my parents had been having some problems, whatever, and they separated when I was 14. And it was my first year in high school. And, you know, still awkward, still terribly uncomfortable, probably at a stage in my life where I'm changing myself anyway, and so I'm even more awkward and uncomfortable. And, you know, I saw the kids that were, you know, sneaking out to go smoke cigarettes behind the bushes and that, and it seemed attractive to me. And I don't know what about it did, because it is what it is, but I was drawn to these people for whatever reason. And, you know, I started to do those things. You know, it started, of course, with smoking cigarettes and whatever. And, you know, drinking did for me what nothing else ever had. None of those activities, none of the accolades, none of the good grades ever made me feel the way that drinking did. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, drinking made me feel like you looked. You know what I mean? I didn't get this, like, euphoric, over-the-top. I just felt like I could breathe and that I was, you know, one among many and that we were all here together and whatever music you were playing was the best music I'd ever heard and we were having the best time and if there were any problems, they would soon be gone and, you know, tomorrow was going to be a new day and everything was great. And all of that madness that I lived with, that whole hamster on the wheel kind of thing in my brain where I would... you know, think about a conversation before it happened. Well, I'm going to say this, and Lynn's going to say this, but then I'll say this, and then Lynn will say this, and then I'll say this, and everyone will laugh because it will be very funny. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff. Or, and then the opposite of that, I would have a conversation, and it would not go well. Well, I should have said this. I should have said that. Or walking down the hallway as someone approaches. Do I say hi? Do I smile? Do I keep a straight face? Do I acknowledge them? You know, that kind of madness that I live with on a regular basis was gone. And I could just breathe. And I lived for that moment when you kind of are, you know, talking and you turn your head and the whole world shifts in a full technicolor focus and everything is fine, you know. And I loved it. You know, I'm not here to badmouth drinking. I thought if I could drink safely, I would, you know, but the reality is I've never drank that way. I can't think of the time that I, you know, I'm sure I have a couple of times that I held on to for a long time of where I had a couple drinks, you know, but very rarely was that ever the case for me. I drank very alcoholically from the start, blackout, pass out, throw up, run out, you know, and that was generally the outcome for me. And, you know, at that time, like I said, my dad had moved out because my parents had separated, and they divorced when I was 16. And I remember feeling, you know, kind of sad about it, maybe a little bit, but it was really the catalyst for me because it was a card that I could lay on the table for you. You know, if my teachers were like, what's happening? You know, you are in all honors classes, and you had this great GPA, and now things are, you know, I just put it on the table. My dad left. You know what I mean? My parents are divorcing. I'm having a really tough time with that. You know what I mean? Things are tough at home. If you really pushed, I'd cry. You know what I mean? I'd play the game. I'd pull out the tears and explain how, you know, things were just so hard and I couldn't concentrate and whatever it was to back you off my drinking. You know, and I went from, you know, kind of having all that stuff to just barely graduating high school. I mean, it was a real struggle for me, and I was skipping class. I'd come in late. My mom had gone back to work full time, and so I had to drive to school now because we had moved, you know, and so they let me continue to stay at my school, and I could drive myself. But at this point, I get to write my own notes, too. You know what I mean? Because mom's at work. She's like, it's fine, just write your own note. If you don't feel well, go late, whatever. I don't know how many notes they had in the health room, but, you know, I remember picking up my friend, and we, you know, she'd hide from the bus stop, and I'd go pick her up, and, you know, we'd go drinking or whatever the case was, you know, and go to school late or leave early or leave at lunch. You know, I was so entranced by that lifestyle and by what was going on, and for me, drugs are part of my story. I'm definitely 100% alcoholic. I got sober at 20 years old, so for me, I've never had a legal drink. So, you know, there were times where I couldn't get alcohol, and what I could get my hands on is what I could get my hands on. But they never did for me what drinking did for me. They got me high. You know what I mean? Drinking got me normal. Drinking got me to where everybody else was, you know. But I would do whatever I had to do to change the way that I felt, even if it wasn't where I was really going. But already by the time that I was, you know, graduating high school, I knew that I couldn't drink and, like, show up somewhere. You know what I mean? My drinking had already become somewhat unpredictable about how I was going to behave, what I was going to say, do, whether I was slurring, whether I could walk, you know. But I knew if I took something else or did something else that I could still show up. You know what I mean? I could control the outcome with those other things. And I still had a little bit of buffer between me and you that I felt a little bit more okay about myself. And, you know, so I finally made it. I mean, out of high school, my last year, I had to double and triple up on classes that I had been failing like 2 and 3 times because I just no longer had the capability. It was no longer important. None of those sports were important. I lettered in field hockey. Tell you I didn't graduate playing it. You know what I mean? All of those things, slowly, I dropped the band, I dropped chorus, I dropped sports. All of those things became less important to me, you know, because drinking was most important. So I shuffled my whole life around so that drinking was available to me and that, you know, that lifestyle was available to me. You know, I would throw parties at my mom's house, you know what I mean, while she was at work because she went back to work full-time as a nurse. So she was working, like, 14-hour shifts. So she'd go out, and I would throw a party at my house, and people would destroy it, you know what I mean, despite my best efforts. I mean, I remember them bringing back, like, 4 cases of 40s, you know what I mean, and just everyone from high school showing up at my house. And I had no concept that that was inappropriate or that I should be concerned that I was affecting my mother in that way. You know, I thought, well, I'm just having a good time. Like, I didn't mean for this to happen. I didn't, you know, we were just supposed to kind of hang out and drink or whatever. And I would just blow it off. I already, like, didn't have the internal capability to really see the effects of my budding alcoholism. I thought, well, you know, stuff happens. Sorry. You know, and not thinking that this is a woman who's, like, just gotten divorced from her husband. She has two daughters living with her, and she's working full-time, which she hasn't done since we were born. You know, so already I'm kind of in that selfish and self-centered, you know, way of living. And, you know, I barely graduate high school. And I do what any good alcoholic does. I go into food service. Waiting tables, bussing tables, you know what I mean? I know what's up. Not just that, but I know I can't make a paycheck last more than a couple days. And so, you know, I start waiting tables, and that was great for me because we served alcohol. I could try to, you know, make friends with a bartender or, you know, whatever the case may be, meet up after work and kind of drink with those people. And I got cash money every day. And, you know, when we moved even closer to the city, and I started to get into those other things that were down there. They were more readily available to me. I could show up more. I could show up to my job. If I was hungover, I could get up. If I was too up, I could get down. You know, I could really bounce myself around in a way that I could still present this stage character, you know, and it talks about that into action, you know, about this stage character that I present. And I did that all through my alcoholism. In high school, I presented this kind of girl that was not to be messed with. You know what I mean? That I would fight you in the bathroom if need be. Now, I never did. I never had to because I presented that stage character and it went over. But I would keep you, excuse me, at, you know, at arm's length with whatever kind of stage character I had to put on and own and play to keep drinking the way I wanted to drink and to get in with the people that would allow me to drink the way that I wanted to drink. And, you know, during that time, that was probably a couple of years before the end of my drinking. And in that next, you know, 2.5 years, I ran my life into the ground. I mean, you know, I started, you know, waiting tables, but my relationships were diminishing. Around that time, my sister started drinking, and I remember having a twinge about that inside, you know what I mean? Because I wasn't connected enough to really, sorry, I've been getting over a sinus infection this week, so hopefully this won't happen the whole time. I remember having like a little twinge about that for a second, just like, you know what I mean, I've set this situation up or feeling some sort of responsibility for or how that was going about. And, but then I would just use her. I'd be like, all right, I'll give you a ride to your friend's house, but I need $10. You know what I mean? Or whatever. I would start playing that game. And, I started becoming unemployable. I started having every intention of showing up to that job. It's how I make my money. You know what I mean? And then I look at the clock, and somehow I had maybe turned my alarm off or whatever happened, but it was 2 p.m, and I was like 4 hours late already. You know what I mean? Like, there's no point at that time. And so I'm bouncing around from, you know, restaurant to restaurant at this point, just trying to, like, keep it together. I started, you know, probably in high school, but continuing at this point, using my dad like an ATM. Because he left. You know what I mean? Screw you. This is how we're going to play this game. You want to see me? You want a relationship? This is how this is going to go. And I was resentful, and I didn't understand the situation. You know what I mean? You can't as a child. But so I started using him for money. And I wouldn't see him on visitation. I refused to go. It's just, you know, more and more disconnected with my mom, more and more disconnected with my sister, you know. And by the end, I think I was, like, delivering pizzas poorly. You know what I mean? Poorly. Very poorly. Like, I didn't really know the area we had moved to that well at all. But I had a car. You know what I mean? And, you know, we had a little map at the pizza place. So they'd call out their address, and I'd ask for the cross street, and I'd take, you know, the guy's cell phone, that, you know, the manager, and I'd take your food, and I'd get in the car, and it would take me forever to get your food there. And you know, it was just a bad, bad situation. It was just bad times. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a job I should have had. And, you know, at that point, but during that time, all sorts of crazy things were happening. I was, pawning people's stuff. You know, I pawned my sister's old stereo because she got a new one for Christmas. I'd just sneak it out of the house and pawn it. I would steal checks out of the middle of my mom's checkbook and write them out to cash and take them to a liquor store and cash them. You know what I mean? All of these kinds of things because I couldn't, you know what I mean, I couldn't live in my own skin. I had to had to drink, you know, in that same kind of paragraph and into action, it talks about that cycle that we lived in, you know, where I will take actions while drinking or to drink, and upon, you know, waking up, be so horrified about the things that I've done and hope that no one has seen me and that it will never see the light of day, which puts me under constant fear and tension, which makes for more drinking, you know, and that was really kind of the cycle I was at the end. And I had not been living, I had moved out of my mom's house for like 6 months or a year with this guy. And during that time, I was pretty much unemployable. I would just be drinking or doing whatever I had on hand all day while he went to work. And he would get home, and I would probably be in the same position he left me first thing in the morning. You know what I mean? I had maybe gone to the fridge or gone wherever, but I was back right where I was, passed out, nodded out. And that lasted for probably like 6 months, where I let this guy really support my drinking habit and really let me run myself into the ground a little bit. And when he moved another girl into their house, I knew it was kind of time for me to leave. You know what I mean? Like nothing was ever said. You know, it was just like this other girl just sort of shows up and is now living in the house with us. And I was like, it's time. You know what I mean? And I'm back at my mom's house, you know, and it has become very apparent that something is wrong. By the time I showed up at my mom's house after that breakup, it was the fall of 2000, and I was 80 pounds, I was yellow, I was dirty, I was disgusting, I had stopped probably showering or you know, maybe brushing my teeth, washing my clothes, you know, I was just living to drink at that point. I think I had tried to get a couple of odd jobs while I lived with her, and it's, you know, maybe I lasted a few days, maybe, you know what I mean? And, you know, it became apparent, and I remember we were going to a doctor's appointment one day that she was taking me to, and I get there, and my dad's there, his wife is there, who, to backtrack, I was certainly drunk at their wedding, you know what I mean? They made me a bridesmaid, you know, all of that pretty stuff. And at the reception, I managed to find a waiter who wasn't trying to card me or anything like that, and I'm just drinking. And, you know, so they're there, everybody's there, and there's the counselor lady, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I'm really like, you know, so now I have to get the heat off, you know what I mean? And so I agreed to go to an outpatient detox. That seems reasonable. And actually, the more they talked about it, the more I kind of thought about it, I thought it was very reasonable. And maybe if I stopped doing this other stuff, that was my problem. You know what I mean? You know, if I get all this other stuff out of the way, drinking is legal, and I'll be 21 soon, and then I can, you know, drink like a lady in a bar somewhere, you know what I mean? Not in a basement or a park or, you know. So I was like, all right, we'll do this. And I remember really trying and thinking, you know, because before this time, I should say that there had been at least two times that I can remember, maybe a couple of more, where I had, you know, while I was at work or something. I remember I worked at a hotel one day, and I remember pulling out the phone book and looking at, like, AA and rehabs and stuff like that. And I think I even wrote down a phone number and kind of put it in my pocket. And then later I was like, that seems a little harsh. I mean, like, that seems excessive, really. It's a little much, you know. So I'd had those twinges of something's amiss here. But I couldn't imagine living any other way. And so, you know, I agreed to go to this outpatient detox in Baltimore, which, funny enough, if you went through the city, you passed my guys on the block on the way to get there. You know what I mean? So I was like, fuck. And I tried, you guys. I really tried to take my little packet of meds and stand on the scale when I went every day and, you know, let them take my, you know, blood pressure and all that stuff and take my little packet and go home and take my packet of special pills. But I wasn't doing anything else. And so I was kind of climbing the walls at my mom's house, taking this little packet of pills. And I was to the point where I was so, I don't know, malnourished or emaciated or whatever the case may be, I could not walk down the stairs to the kitchen and get a glass of water and make it back up the stairs without having like a little brownout. You know what I mean? Like pass out for a split second and I've dropped my water and, you know, everything's, now I have to try to go back. And so it was a rough, you know, few weeks. And I think the outpatient detoxed me like 10 days or whatever. And, you know, I did that. I really tried. And I said, you know, all right, let me go to one of these meetings maybe, right? So I started attending meetings of another fellowship, and I'll tell you, and this is whatever it was for them at that time, no one reached out to me. No one asked me if I was new. I remember at one point after going for a little while, I asked a woman to sponsor me, and she said no, said that she could not, and you know, so, you know, I'm just going, and maybe if I'm really upset, I kind of verbally vomit on the meeting and then leave before you can help me, you know. And I met a guy there, and he had money, and I still had my car. And it was back off to the game, you know what I mean, because I had not been able to find relief. And I was back out there for maybe another 3 months. And in that 3 months, you know, I would let this guy kind of do the dirty work, because even though the stage character I presented was kind of a badass and like, don't mess with me and I'll do whatever I have to do, which I did at times, you know, I've definitely demoralized myself to get what I had to get. But really I was more of a nuisance, and I would prefer to take the easy track and let you do the hard work. You know what I mean? So I would drive this guy around, and he would go into your house and take whatever we could get our hands on. I would pawn it, or if there was cash, we'd take the cash and go to the city, you know. And after doing this for a little while, I called that guy's house one day to see what meeting we were going to meet up at. And he had overdosed. You know what I mean? We had been out the night before, because that was always his thing, that we were going to the meeting. We never made it into the meeting, very rarely. And he had overdosed the night before, after I had dropped him off at his house. And I remember having, like I said, a twinge. There's always this little twinge of, like, God in me, or conscience, or whatever you want to call it. And I had a twinge about it. But then it was quickly, you know, brushed aside by, well, he just wasn't doing it right. Anger and dismissal. And I can tell you, I think I went to that funeral and right after I went back to the city. You know, and I felt as if you had cracked me open from, like, collarbone to pelvic bone and just, like, ribs spread me open, just black sludge would have poured out. Already at that time, there was no, there was no semblance really left of the person that I had been. You know what I mean? My parents had taken me to church and Sunday school, and I had learned important lessons on how to be a good person in school. Like, but none of that was really there. I had had to kind of push that aside to live the kind of life I was living. Those tools didn't work out there, and I had had to create new ones and figure out new ones to survive out there in the drinking world. And so I really had no appropriate emotional response to life anymore. And I was back out there. That was the end of October of 2000. I didn't get to another detox until around Christmas of that year. And, you know, I went to another detox. Now, this is a funny story now, but then, you guys, I was totally serious and thought this was straight up legit. Okay, I was like, drinking and these other things that I really like to do are my problem. But you know what I hate? Smoking crack. So you know what I'm going to do? Smoke crack. You know what I mean? Because I don't even like it. And so I'll just do this to get through this detox, and then I'll go into rehab and I'll be fine. You know what I mean? Like, I just need to, like, change a little something on the inside. And so I picked up a little social crack for a quick, you know, few weeks to get me through what I thought was this detox, you know. And I go into rehab, and you guys, without a solution and without anything to change the way that I feel, I know I'm not very big, and then I was even smaller. You know what I mean? I'm not someone that is very intimidating by, you know, stature alone. But I am belligerent, I'm defiant, I'm violent, I'm nasty, I'm mean. I will cuss you as soon as look at you. I will get you away from me, because when I'm in that place, it feels like I'm walking through a cheese grater. It feels like everything hurts. Everything is uncomfortable. There's no relief. You know, it's miserable. And I played that card for a couple of weeks in rehab until they asked me to leave, you know, because I just wanted to feel better, but I couldn't interact with you at that point. I was just nasty and mean and, you know, cussing, and they don't like that. And they asked me to leave, and rightly so. Good for them. You know what I mean? I wasn't doing their program at all. You know, I was just, I was awful. And, you know, I remember that night, I went out drinking with my sister, right? Because drinking's not my problem. It's this other stuff I've been doing. That's the real problem. Drinking's fine, you know, and it talks about that in the big book. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, I will try to prove myself an exception to the rule and therefore non-alcoholic. And that's what I've been doing, you know what I mean? So it's fine. I'm going to go out drinking tonight, right? Got me some Jack Daniels, my favorite, you know. I'm going to go out drinking with my sister, you know. Now, mind you, my sister at this time is 16. So she and her friend and I go drinking. And we go out to this club that she can get into out in Towson. Many things happened that night, but the first thing that I noticed after downing a full flask of you know, flask-sized bottle, the flat one that you can, you know, steal real good, and after drinking that just to myself, I'm at this club, and I realize that I'm as physically drunk as I can possibly be. My brain's still running on all 8 cylinders. You know what I mean? Everything's still going, and I'm horrified, first of all, because that's what I drink to shut up. You know, I don't like that. And so, you know, and I knew it. Because, you know, if you know how drunk you are, you're not having a good drunk. And, you know, so I was not having a good drunk. I was a little upset about that. I was like, how are we going to work this out? You know what I mean? My sister gets a parking ticket because I made her park, like, right next to the club. I was like, it's snowy. It's January of 2001. And, you know, so we're in there, whatever. We leave, and my sister on the way home wrecks her car. Love that car. She had a 96 cherry red Camaro. I know. I love that car. Which no 16-year-old girl should be driving in the snow. But, you know, that's how we did. We didn't, you know, we did whatever we felt like. So it's snowy and icy out, and she's trying to drive this rear-wheel drive car home. And she skids out on some ice, and we flip end over end off an on-ramp into a drainage ditch from 695 to 95. I break my window with myself. You know, we're flipping end over end. The car lands upside down. My sister crawls out over me because I am half in and half out of the car. And the car is so mangled that her friend climbs out the trunk while the car is upside down. And some gentlemen come by, stop, clean out the car. You know what I mean? Because that's what I considered a gentleman. If you're going to get all the evidence out of my car before the cops get here, that's my kind of guy. You know what I mean? And so they stop, help us out. Cops get there. And my mom ends up coming to pick us up, you know, because that's kind of how she was. And the next day I get a call from this kid I had been in rehab with. I only knew him for a few days. And he asked me what I was doing. I said, nothing, I'm trying to go to the city. Do you know what I mean? I have safety glass cuts from head to toe. I've been, you know, beat up and battered and broken my window, and I just want to feel better, you know. And he says, that's cool, but we got to go to this meeting, too. Do you want to go with us, and we'll take you, and then we'll go to this meeting? I was like, sure. Cause, you know, I had been to meetings before. I had sat in the back and, you know, been messed up from time to time. And if it's really messed up, you know, I'd cry and leave before you could help me. And so I was like, sweet, this is a good deal, you know. So I'll sit through a meeting for that. He and his sponsor pick me up at my house and take me directly to a Saturday night AA meeting. You know, Lynn will get this part. I'm out in Baltimore. I'm hacking, you know what I mean, which is illegally taxiing myself. So I'm letting anybody who will give me some cash in the car and driving them around, which is incredibly dangerous. I'm doing all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of the life I was living. He and his sponsor take me to a meeting called Saturday Night Special, which at the time was in Chevy Chase. if you know the difference between those two places, you understand my predicament when I arrived at that meeting. Because I, you know, it's a more kind of affluent area, I guess, in Montgomery County. But I was out, you know, like I said, what I looked like when I showed up at that meeting, to give you an idea, I was wearing Tim's, men's large black sweatpants, this like men's extra large rugged wear t-shirt, just a crazy symbol and writing on it, and a men's large snowboarding jacket in bright yellow. Maybe I was 85 pounds at this point, you know what I mean? But I'm still yellow, I'm still gross, I'm still awful, you know? And I get taken to this meeting. And I'm sure the meeting looked probably just like this meeting tonight. Everyone looked like they took a shower. They put on, like, clothes that were clean and matched each other, you know what I mean? Everyone had brushed their hair, and the ladies were wearing makeup, and, you know, just a regular meeting. But I walked in, and I was like, there's no way these people can help me. I mean, there's no way that looking at them and looking at me and what I've brought to this meeting, that you know anything about what's going on in my life. And, you know, I thought I'd walked into, like, a country time. Excuse me. A country time lemonade commercial. You know what I mean? Everyone looked like, we're all friends and happy and we're all laughing. And I was like, there's no way. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no way. And the thought that I actually had was, it's, you know, I must be nice to be able to, like, blow Coke off your parents' Tiffany's platters, but I have real problems. You know what I mean? Like, this is a little fancy pants for me here. But I'll tell you what. After that meeting, women surrounded me. You know, someone at halftime had shoved me up to get a 24-hour chip. And, you know, I didn't know what the deal was because, you know, there had been no women in my life that had wanted to have, like, a friendship with me or, like, a relationship that wasn't based on getting something. It was always about what do you got, what do you, you know, you got something, you got booze, what do you got? And so it was very weird to me that, you know, women just wanted to hang out with me and, like, give me their number and pick me up for meetings. But honestly, at that point, there was nothing going on. My mom was in the process of kicking me out, and I was having to move in with my dad and my stepmom, which was awful for me, if you can imagine. And kind of a Kleenex. Because I'm 20 years old at this point, and I'm living with my dad and his new wife under their rules. I have a curfew, and you know, my dad's, like, writing down the people who picked me up for the meeting's tag number to make sure I, like, make it home. You know what I mean? It's like that. Like, wants to make sure that if I don't come back, he knows how to find me. And, like, I was still kind of unemployable and angry. I was still, you know. And honestly, it took me another couple of months to get a sobriety date. I was still on... I was still on the meds that the rehab had put me on, you know what I mean? So I was already kind of a little zombied out. And I still didn't think I was really alcoholic. And I didn't think this would work for me. And so it took me those 2 months of, I think I had a couple of slips in that time, but I didn't get honest about them until maybe June, I think. But what did happen in that time is that I made a couple of running buddies, you know, women that had about the same amount of time as me. And it really saved my life because I remember there would be times where I'd think, I don't want to go to the meeting. I just want to go try to maybe get my hands on a little cash and maybe go to the city or see if I can pull a Hey Mister somewhere and get somebody to get me some booze. Like, I can't, you know. And but I'd have to pick them up for the meeting, right? You know what I mean? I made a plan with my friends, and I'm going to pick them up for the meeting, and I have to, right, because nobody else can. You know, this is always how you think, that I'm the only one that can do this, so I got to show up. And that's what I thought, and so, you know, I would pick them up, and I'd think, okay, well, maybe after the meeting, you know. But by the time I picked them up, we went to coffee, we hung out with people, maybe one of us had service at that meeting, sat through the meeting, you know, hung out after. I would feel better. You know, I would feel better. And so I'd take them home, and I could go home and go to sleep. And the same was true with service. During that time, I got some service solutions. I got a sponsor. I couldn't read the book right away. I was functionally illiterate. I could read the words on the page, but I couldn't hold it. I'd have to reread the same paragraph over and over and over again. And, you know, but over time, I started kind of getting into the steps, and I started, you know, going, because at first, honestly, you guys, I went for the hang. I went for the fact that there were sober people there, and they would let me ride in the car, and sometimes they'd buy me a coffee, you know what I mean? But, like, my dad would let me go with them, which was, you know, most important. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you so much. Oh, that's good. Oh. Yeah, I was homesick for 2 days this week, dying, so it's still working its way out. You know, but I would go for the hang. I'd go because people were nice to me and my family would let me go. I wasn't there to, like, really do what you guys were doing, and I was just still kind of checking things out. But over time, my brain kind of defogged. I started sitting down and, you know, reading the book with my sponsor and going through the steps and, you know, really trying to figure out what it meant to be an alcoholic. Because I still was like, yeah, but I did these other things, so maybe I don't quite belong here. Maybe I belong over there where nobody wants, in my perception at that time, where nobody wants to help me. You know what I mean? Where no one's real interested about what's going on with me. But here you guys were almost, you know, in love with me that I was here and that I, you know what I mean? Like, everyone was so nice and sure we'll give you a ride. You know, it was like, you're the most popular kid in school, you know, for a little bit. And you know, so I got to do all that stuff. And I remember, you know, my dad one time, it was so funny that I remember this, he gave this girl a roll of quarters so that I could get into the dance. You know what I mean? It was like that. I didn't have a job. He was like, here, let her go to the dance. You know what I mean? And gave it to my ride. He didn't give it to me. You know what I mean? Like, gave it to the girl who was driving me. But, gosh, so funny. We were talking about it. I had my class dinner last night. And what we do in my home group is everyone who gets sober in the same year, we get together once a year and we have a dinner and we have somebody in our home group who has more time. It used to be my old sponsor, Mike, or at the time my pigeon brother, Frank, would lead them. Sadly, both of them have passed, and so it's someone with time, more time than us in our home group that leads it. And we had it last night, and we were kind of taking that trip down memory lane. If I had only known how, like, easy it was for me in early sobriety, because I wasn't really working. I got to go to the beach. You know, we went to the beach. We went to the meeting. We went to the dance. Like, I didn't have any, like, real responsibilities or anything that I was accountable to. I could just do this. And I'm sure I believed I had problems. You know what I mean? And that I had dramas and big deals. And but I really just ran with those two girls that were my running buddies. And I went and did the fellowship, really. You know, we went to the beach all the time, and, you know, we went to conferences, and Icky Paws, and Cirky Paws, and Miggy Paws, and Visky Paws, and all the paws, and just hung out and did this, you know, to however failingly, newly sober, you know. but I remember one night, you know, this is kind of like a second step moment for me. I was supposed to meet at the time, he wasn't my sponsor, but I was supposed to meet Mike and a bunch of people that, to me, had, you know, a zillion years sober, right? You know, they're all people with long-term sobriety. I have, like, 9 months or something like that, a year, whatever. And they had invited me to go with them to the opera and, you know, paid for. I just got to show up and hang out with them. But I'm not from D.C., you guys. So I'm like, I get, you know, so excited, put my stuff on, put my big girl shoes on, get in the car, I'm going to go. And I'm incredibly lost in D.C. And I start saying this serenity prayer. You know, I turn off the radio, start saying the serenity prayer. Start, like, screaming this serenity prayer, you know, just over and over. I don't know where I am. I'm, like, getting ready to have, like, newcomer meltdown, you know. Looks like a 2-year-old temper tantrum. And, you know, so finally I pull over. I don't know where I am. I'm, like, ready to just, like, but I got to show up, right? You know, I don't know what to do. And the phone rings. And it was this guy in my home group who had some time. He was actually, I think at the time, my grand sponsor. He said, hey, I heard you were going to the opera tonight. Are you there? Did you, you know, is it going good? And I was like, I don't know where I am. And, well, I, you know, but this is really like a second time moment for me. He goes, what do you see? What do you see on the street that you're on? And I was like, well, I see this and this and this. He goes, I know where you are. He was like, pull out. And he told me turn by turn how to get to where I needed to go to, like, meet up with the AA people. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, that's crazy. Do you know what I mean? And, but it's been like that for me with God. That's, like, the right phone call, the right touch, the right letter, the right whatever at the right moment has, like, always kind of come through for me in AA. And I've held on to that because it was so, you know, I don't know how many people can do that over the phone, but I was certainly impressed, you know what I mean? And it was, like, right at the right moment, and it was just, like, such a God shot for me. And I needed it at that time. I was still newly sober. I didn't get it. I thought God was going to take care of you, like, not me. You know what I mean? I had all these ideas and shame and all this stuff wrapped up in my inventory. And, you know, shortly after that, I did, you know, my fourth and fifth step where, you know, all that stuff gets to come out. And I remember my sponsor said, if it's got a name, you're not the first one to do it. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, right. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need to hold on to all this. Somebody else has already done it. It's got a name. It's probably in the dictionary. You know what I mean? Like, you're not the first person that's you know, pulled this kind of stuff. And I got to see that I was, like, one among many. And I remember, you know, she's like, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to kind of shed a lot of that stuff. Even if I couldn't fully process it at that time, I got to shed a lot of the most painful stuff for me that was there. And, you know, I've had ups and downs in sobriety. Oh, good. I'm on track. And, you know, I remember at 2 years sober, I was ending a relationship that I had chosen, probably not consciously, to put all my dependence on. I put all my eggs in that relationship basket. You know what I mean? And it ended and I was so damaged by the way that I had chosen to behave in that relationship and where I had put my dependence in that relationship, because it doesn't kind of matter. My sponsor at the time would say, I don't care what they did. I don't sponsor them. You know what I mean? And so regardless of the part that person, you know, played in that relationship, I behaved poorly and I put my dependence in that, which it should not have been there. And so I'm incredibly broken, you know, and I had to get super active. More active than I had ever been. I mean, I was like sneaking out of my office and going to a noon every day. I was going to the night meeting. I was like asking anybody who would listen what they wanted and how I could help them get it. You know, like, but in a very like desperate way, because I felt so broken and so miserable. And coming out of that, I can tell you after I was doing all that stuff and so involved, I felt a million times better. I was incredibly sick in sobriety. I've been sick, you know, a couple of different times, and I've, you know, been to the hospital, all that kind of stuff. But I'll tell you what, if you don't get anything else out of my talk, is that I've always been carried by AA and the people in AA. And, you know, I mean, people would pick me up and take me to doctor's appointments. People came over to my house and, like, went in my kitchen and baked my cookies for the meeting. I've had friends come over and do my laundry, you know what I mean, because I, like, couldn't get out of bed, and, like, take me places, take me to meetings, you know, wherever I had to be. You know, I've never been alone when I needed, you know, I don't even come to a meeting by myself, you know what I mean, most times. I you know, I get to hang out and be with people, and, you know, my sister got sober 18 months behind me, and, you know, I got to be in her wedding. I got to be her maid of honor. I'm the godmother to one of her children. You know what I mean? Like, I've repaired a lot of these relationships. I've been able to make, you know, a lot of my amends were financial, quite honestly, because my family was, like, the number one detonation center of all my mayhem. But, you know, so a lot of that kind of stuff was financial. But we have a relationship today, and I've been able to build that relationship in AA with her. And, you know, I've been able to work through steps. I've been able to work, you know, my cousin died 4 or 5 years ago of an overdose. And I got to show up there at that funeral and just kind of be supportive to my family and, you know, be kind of a bright spot there. Great things have happened, you know what I mean? And things that have happened, and I was talking about this in my share last night at our class dinner. I got laid off in at the end of August. And, you know, what that looked like was so different. It was so confusing to me because, you guys, when I got here, when I did my taxes, when I had, you know, 3 months sober or whatever, I had 14 W-2s. You know what I mean? It was like that. It was like that. And when I got laid off in August, my boss was upset that he had to do it. No one was happy about it, but, it you know, financially for the company, it had to happen. I mean, every concession was made to, like, kind of move things and make it as easy for me as possible. But the funny thing about that is my sponsor had been telling me that I should leave that job for a while and go, you know, you need to go get another job, get a better job, you know, maybe closer to home, whatever. Well, God certainly did for me what I could not do for myself, you know what I mean? Because security seeking is certainly one of my greatest defects, and if I feel comfortable in a place, I'm willing to stay there, even if it isn't, the good is the enemy of the best, so to speak. And, you know, so I got laid off, and I thought, what am I going to do, you know? And my friends were doing this, like, kind of haunted house thing, people in AA, and they called me and asked me if I would come work there. It was like a 66% pay cut for me. But I didn't have any other options at the time, and they let me go to interviews and do whatever, and it was a seasonal thing, and I got there, and at first I felt kind of, like, depressed about my life. You know what I mean? I'm 30-some years old, and I do the time cards at a haunted house. You know, this is what I have been brought to. But I'll tell you what, I was surrounded by people in AA. All the people that worked there for the most part during the days when it was not open were AA people. Yeah, and AA people would stop by there randomly because they knew we were all there and come in and let's go get lunch and let's do this and let's go to the noon, like whatever. And it quickly turned around for me to being like a great bright spot where I felt like really good and surrounded and whole, that I could go out to interviews and put my best face forward and not this, like, desperate, like, gnawing, like, please hire me kind of a thing. And the job I got at the end of October was better than my last job. But I never would have gotten there if I hadn't been kind of knocked down a little bit and forced to make the decisions that I maybe should have made for myself earlier. And things like that have happened constantly, you know. I remember another time earlier in my sobriety, I was unemployed, but I had to pay my COBRA because I had been incredibly sick, and I had to keep COBRAing my insurance, but I didn't know how I was going to pay it. I didn't have the money, you know what I mean? And then I got rear-ended. And the money that I got for the rear-ending was like triple what I needed to fix my bumper, and I was able to pay my COBRA that month. But it's seriously, things like that have happened over and over where it's like, the money just shows up, or the people just show up, or it just aligns itself just right where like whatever happens needs to happen, and it's worked out. And you know, this past year it's been wild for me. My sister had to move further away from me, so I didn't get to see her as much. Like I said, I was laid off, got a new job, I got a new sponsor in November, and all these things are tough for me because, like I said, I'm so security driven, and I really love a good routine, you guys. I mean, if I know where we're going and what's happening on any given day, I could not be happier. And you know, I've had great sponsors over the years, and I've had, you know, things that I've had to change. And this year was a year where I had to change sponsors for me, and in my recovery, it was what needed to happen. And she is certainly dogged, and on my rear, but not for lack. You know, I'm there. I'm calling. I'm asking for that. You know what I mean? It's not that she has to chase me down or force me to do anything. You know, it's really something new and different, because for a long time I thought, if I have 8 service positions, I'm okay. You know what I mean? If I'm at the meeting every night, I'm okay. If I'm doggedly hunting this and newcomers and more service positions and meetings and I'm here, I'm okay. But it's not necessary, you know what I mean? But I wasn't looking, you know, I was instead showing you that I was doing this with 8 service positions, with multiple commitments at you know, different places, and picking people up and doing all of that. And it's had to turn back to that relationship with God, and like, what am I really doing? Because that's what our book says, you know, the book is designed to help us find a higher power that will solve our problem, you know. And so, don't get me wrong, meetings are great, service positions are great, and I still have some, and I still go to them. But I can't, you know, kind of checklist my sobriety, and that's kind of a little bit, you know, if I can do enough, I can keep this monkey off my back, and I know I'll be okay, and I don't have to worry. But it's really about, you know, doing the inside work for me at this point, you know, of really, you know, looking at the causes and conditions and what's driving me and the false ideas that I can still have to this day. And, you know, I love AA, and it has really saved me. It turned me from, you know, 12 years ago from this, you know, 85 pounds and yellow and just a mess of a person to someone who can show up today. Like, I have a job where people like me. Like, I have keys and, like, a security code. You know what I mean? It's crazy. I'm like, do they not know? You know, but it's like that. Like, I am a trusted member of my family, a trusted member of my home group, a trusted member at my office. You know, it is for me as someone who does what I say I'm going to do, and I try to be where I say I'm going to be. You know, even if I cough through most of my talk, you know what I mean? Like I'll be here, snarfy and all. You know, but I'm so grateful again for you guys for asking me to come out, and thanks for letting me share. Yeah.